Tom, I'm Gordon Griffin.
Portions of this program
the
may be pre-recorded.
Program is sponsored.
The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Senator Joe Morrissey. Great to have you, Joe. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good. So I got a bunch of people texting me, and they said, oh, your friend Morrissey voted for the gun grab bill, whatever it was, the one that went down yesterday, the semi-automatics, the magazines. And here was my response, Joe, at 6 a.m. You're my best friend. You have been in favor of limiting magazines and limiting assault rifles and semi-automatic weapons for three decades. In fact, you're the guy that took the AK-47 down into the well to dramatize it. So you've been consistent on that. Everybody knows where you stand on it. I don't know why everybody is shocked by your vote.
Well, first of all, I'm not quite sure what they shouldn't be shocked. You're right. If anything, I am consistent. But actually, my vote yesterday was to pass the bill by for the day. So we did not even vote in the Senate up or down that gun bill. There was a motion made. I serve on Judiciary. There was a motion made in Judiciary to pass it by for the year. I made a motion to pass it by for the day. And indeed, it was passed by for the year. And everybody knows that passed by for the year is legislature speak for kill the bill. Okay.
Right.
So the bill was killed in the Senate. And I have said all along, so I'm not quite sure what they mean that I voted for the gun grab. Number two, you may recall me saying a while ago, a lot of legislation that is coming from the House to the Senate, the brakes are going to be put on. So anyway, with that said, listen, I'm still of the persuasion that I am, why do you need an AK-47? And John, people will just have to, agree to disagree on that point. That's, I don't know where else to go on that.
Yeah, but I think what I'm saying is you've been consistent. I mean, you have been opposed to semi-automatic weapons on the street forever. And so it shouldn't come as a shock to somebody. Everything
Correct.
That you've said, you've done. And so, look, I mean, I don't agree with you, Joe, on everything, but I don't care because you're the backstop here. You're the Senate conscious to stop a lot of crazy stuff that has come down there. You've stood by your word on it. And you are a Democrat representing a district where the Republican gets 18%. So let's put this in perspective, okay? Would you rather have Joe there or Roz Dance, who is going to vote a check mark on every single piece of legislation that came down the Dem pike? So that to me, there's no argument, and that's why you beat her with 72% and knocked her out because. You're going to reflect the will of the people. So let's move on from that. Okay, so that goes down. Why did four Democrats voted against it? Peterson, Edwards, I was surprised at that because he's retiring. Cray Deeds, that made sense. Bath County made sense to me. I always thought we'd get him. And Peterson, and Sorovel. Why did they vote to scrap that bill?
There was not the vote on Judiciary, all right, to pass the House bill. Okay? There were not the votes. So they voted to pass it by for the year, study the matter. As most people know, if you're not in favor of a bill, instead of voting no to the bill, you vote to pass it by for the year. So that's what happened. It's not that, not that complicated. Cray Deeds and Chap Peterson were not proponents of the assault weapon ban. They and if it had come up to a yay or nay vote, they would have voted nay, along with other Republicans in the boat, and the bill would have been killed. Anyway, that's gone. Let's move on to something. Let's talk on about Amanda, what she's doing. Let's talk about, I heard your colloquy regarding Biden and Sanders. I want to weigh in on that, okay?
Okay, let's start with Amanda Chase announcing for governor yesterday. My position on it is, why not?
Yeah, you're spot on. Here's the deal. Amanda has had a rough session. All right, Amanda has, but I've admired the following. She has stood up to some intense pressure from both her own party, her own Republican caucus, and from Democrats. She has not wavered from her very conservative Second Amendment pro-gun position. She has not wavered one bit. And I got to tell you, she may be dismissed by many in her own party. She may be dismissed, I'm talking about in the Republican caucus in
right.
the state capitol. She may be dismissed by a lot of Democrats. But let me tell you this. Amanda Chase has a base. That base is the Second Amendment crowd, and I say crowd respectfully, okay,
right.
respectfully.
Yes.
And if there's a convention, I'm telling you, she could grab that convention and get the nod to be the head of the Republican ticket in 2021.
I agree with you.
Now, with that said, she is going to finish this session exactly where she started, loyal to her Second Amendment roots and her following. And the people, here's the best way of putting it. What you see with Amanda is what you get. All right? There is no doublespeak with Amanda. She doesn't say one thing to one crowd and another to another crowd.
That's right.
She is genuine to her beliefs, irrespective of whether you believe those or accept or acquiesce to those beliefs. It's that simple. So she's a player. But here's the thing. The Republican bench for governor is weak.
Yep.
There's nobody in the Senate, and I have lunch with them every day, and I'm happy and proud to say I've got a lot of colleagues on the other side, a lot of Republicans who I very much admire, you know, and see every day. And I'm telling you, not one person is talking about running for governor, except for Amanda.
Right.
So that's that. Now, I know Pete Snyder has talked about it. I know Pete. He's a very good person, but he's unknown statewide. Okay. And you got to ask who else is going to run. You know what you come up with is a big question mark. Now, a lot of folks are waiting to see what Terry McAuliffe is going to do.
He's going to run.
There's the perception if Terry runs, then that's it. It's game over. He gets nomination. He gets elected for second term. Let me tell you something.
I don't think it's that easy.
Terry campaigned at a fundraiser at my home. Myrna's in my home. But let me tell you something. If people look at it that way, you and I both know in politics, John, that is the quickest way to get beaten, to assume that it's all over.
That's
right. Let me give you an example. Do you remember George Allen and Mary Sue Terry?
Yes.
Mary Sue Terry started with a 29 percentage point lead. George Allen was a distant question mark.
Right.
But remember, he was redistricted out of his congressional seat in Charlottesville. He got the nod, and he just continued to build and build, and then trounced Mary Sue Terry, having been down by nearly 30 points. So
right.
What is my point? Do not assume that the game is over because Terry is going to win. I think he's got advantages. Terry is charismatic, but I'm telling you, I believe that at the end of the day, somebody is going to emerge from the Republican side and give the Democratic nominee, perhaps Terry McAuliffe, a run for money. I think the Republicans now are looking for the second and third positions right now. I love Bill Stanley for either AG or even lieutenant governor. I think he would make Bill is funny. He's charismatic. He's popular on both sides of the aisle. He doesn't take himself too seriously, and that's unique in politics. I love that about Bill. He's very astute. He has taken issues and he has championed issues this session that appeal across party lines, like rebuilding our public schools throughout the Commonwealth, getting rid of that, reinstating people's licenses who have been suspended because of fines and costs. Bill is going to be a statewide candidate. The question is, which office? And then there are a host of other people that are angling for positions right now. We'll talk more about that later.
Look, I agree with everything you said, other than I don't think that Terry McAuliffe's nomination is fait accompli. I am not counting Justin Fairfax out at all. And in a crowded field with Jennifer McClellan and Carolyn Foy and McAuliffe, and maybe a Tom Perriello jumps in with the backing of Clean Virginia, whatever those people are, I could see Fairfax winning. And
excuse me. You're right, John. I'm sorry. I may have misspoke. I didn't. If I said Terry McAuliffe's nomination is a fait accompli, then I misspoke.
Right.
No, my point was, if people are assuming that,
right,
then they're mistaken. You're right. Justin is all in. Somebody who I like also, Carol Foy.
Yeah.
Delegate Carol Foy. She's a player.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, she's tough. She's a VMI grad. She campaigned pregnant with twins. She is got a commanding presence. She has unlimited confidence. She's a player. McClellan so far is still in the metro. No. There's no fait accompli at all at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think. And okay, let me just ask you this. Do you think if you had to bet now, do you think Trump is going to get reelected if you had to bet now?
Oh, yeah. I'll take that bet any day.
Okay. Why? So if he gets reelected, there is no chance, I'm saying. I mean, there's always a chance. There is a less than 5% chance that a Republican captures the governorship in 21 if Trump wins again in 2020, because we can't get the Trump voters out for anybody but Trump. We didn't get him out in 17. I didn't get him out in 2019. They're not coming out in 2021. They just don't come out for these statewide races. We don't have an apparatus to get him out. I'm not sure that there's the funding is ever going to be there. So that's why, do I think Amanda Chase is going to be the nominee on the Republican side if Trump wins? Absolutely. Why not? Then that's my thing. Why not? Who else is there? You know, at least, like you said, she has a base. All right, let's get to the presidential race. Do you have an announcement to make on this?
Well, yes. I think that, unlike what you just said a moment ago, you said Bernie Sanders is going to get the nominee. Here's what I think. I think they're going to, at the end of the primary cycle, no single candidate will have, I think you need 1,700 delegates. I couldn't.
1,910.
There you go. You're the man.
1,910
Thanks. Delegates. No single candidate will have it. It will be a brokered convention.
Right.
Do I think somebody from the outside who hasn't competed in the process, like Michelle Obama, will get it? No, absolutely not. The Democratic nominee is going to be one of the candidates that competed in the process.
Right.
With that said, it's going to be brokered, and are you ready?
Yes.
A Buttigieg leads the ticket. If he doesn't lead the ticket, he's on it. And I want to just brag for one moment, John. I want to remind the viewers what happened a year and a month ago, 13 yes. months ago.
Yes.
On my show, I predicted that this guy named Pete Buttigieg, who nobody could pronounce his name, who was at less than 0.1%, I said then, folks, watch out for this guy.
True.
In the radio, in the studio, we had all those folks around. They said, who are you talking about? I said, listen to me, folks.
True.
This person is going to be on the Democratic ticket. 1 year later, he's come in first or second in the first two primaries. He is not going all the way. He's going to fall short of 1,700. Sanders is going to fall short of 1,700, but it's going to be a brokered convention. Do I see a Buttigieg-Sanders ticket? Possibly, but let me tell you something. If Sanders leads the ticket, Trump is, in my opinion, almost assured of being reelected.
Well, they're going to have to stop him. I mean, he just had a rally last night. He got 17,000 people out. There's none of these candidates can get 17,000 people out on the other side. He's got a movement, and you're going to have to stop him. You're not going to stop him in Nevada. He's going to win that. If he wins South Carolina, Joe, panic is going to set in for the entire Democratic Party, because then he turns into a juggernaut. He's ahead in Texas, and he's ahead in Florida. And here's the thing with Bloomberg. I think the worst thing that happened to Bloomberg is him getting on the debate stage on Wednesday night, because everybody is going to be attacking the guy, where up to now he's gotten basically a free ride. I thought he was a pretty good mayor when I was in New York. I had no beef with the guy. I thought he cleaned up the streets. Crime was down. Quality of life was up. And, but like he did things that might have worked as mayor, but now he's got an answer for these. So I think he's got some issues. But he's going to win Virginia. I think the big story on Super Tuesday is Bloomberg is going to win Virginia. He's got an awesome ground game here. And I tell you what, they've hired, get this, Joe, they've got 2,100 paid staff in the field. Do you know that on Super Tuesday in 2016, when I was with the Trump campaign, do you know how many paid staffers we had in the entire organization? 52. 52. At the same point in 2020, Bloomberg has got 2,100. We had 52 paid staff in the entire Trump campaign on Super Tuesday. 52. He's got 2,100. I mean, he's paying.
You think Bloomberg gets on the ticket?
He's got to. He's paying field organizers that were making $2,500 with some of the early candidates a month. He's paying them $6,000 a month. I mean, he sopped up all the players, and I think he's going to be a very formidable candidate, and he's going to have enough delegates amassed to basically be the overlord. He's going to decide who the nominee is, I think.
Will he take second place on the ticket?
Sure.
All right, there you go. There's your ticket. Buttigieg, Bloomberg. I don't believe Bloomberg is willing to take second place.
We'll see, right? We'll see. If not second place, he'll certainly be calling the shots. But we'll see what happens in Nevada on Saturday. Now, Joe, here's my question. You're right. A year and a month ago, when nobody heard of the guy, I couldn't even say his name. I still call him Mayor Pete. I can't figure it out. You said that he was the guy to watch, and you predicted he would be the nominee. And I'm like, you're nuts. I don't even know who this guy is. So you did predict that. So have you made a formal endorsement of him coming up to Super Tuesday?
I haven't made a formal endorsement of him, but I would and am willing to endorse Buttigieg. Not that Joe Morrissey's endorsement of anybody means anything. It's simply one guy that's out there that is listening, that is paying attention, that endorses a candidate, and I'll be very clear why I endorse Buttigieg. I love candidates that are asked questions. They think and they give an answer to that question. Most candidates on the stump, they already got their canned response. Irrespective of what the question is asked, they answer the question that they want to. Buttigieg is smart. Okay, he is knowledgeable. He is a war veteran. He lives in a modest home in South Bend, Indiana. He is a millennial. The fact that he is young, 37 years old, doesn't bother me. He is, I believe, a Rhodes Scholar. He's erudite. He has got tremendous, I think he's got tremendous aptitude for the position. He's also something, he's got the following that I really admire in people. He's disciplined. All right? He is disciplined. He has a disciplined approach to almost all facets of his life, even the way he conducts himself on stage. I'm supporting Buttigieg, and not because I think he's the best guy for the position.
All right, there you have it. Joe Morrissey, Senator. Joe Morrissey going to vote for Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, on Super Tuesday. Now, I'm voting in the Super Tuesday primary as a Republican because it's open, and I'm undecided. But I tell you what, I don't do Operation Chaos. I don't do that. I'm going to vote for the person that I think, in the event that Trump doesn't win, would be the least problematic. That's what I'm going to do. Not my wife. She's voting for Bernie. She's a Bernie bro.
Before I go, listen, by the way, I got to get to a parent-teacher conference for Chase. How many people got to get? This is the third or fourth parent-teacher conference I've gone to this year for my four-year-old. I think they're getting, I don't know if they're getting ready to throw them out or not. Who knows? I got to go to that. But let me end by telling you, you and I had a conversation about who I think has had a great session. You want to know who's had a great session?
Who? You.
No, I'm not talking about me. The governor. Look at where we were last year. Look at where we are now. Look at the governor's trajectory, where he is now, the stature that he has in the party, the leadership that he's done. He's had an MVP season, John.
Whatever.
John.
Whatever,
John.
Joe.
Look at the
whatever.
Fact.
I can't get over the picture. I don't really care. I can't get over the picture. I can't get over the fact that he lied about it. I can't get over the fact that he changed his position to now trying to sign everything so he can prove he's not a racist. I can't get over the moonwalk. I can't get over the third term, Kathy Tram. I just can't get past it. I can't wait till the guy's out of there. I just can't wait.
John, you value redemption, okay? I know that. You value redemption.
I value honest redemption. His redemption has been completely dishonest because he never admitted to it. That's the difference. He never said, hey, I was in the picture. I'm sorry. It was 30 years ago. You know what? I've evolved as a man and a husband and a father, and I never should have done that. No, he lied about it, and then he changed his position. So he was never honest about what he did. That's why I want Terry McAuliffe back. John Fredericks, Radio Network. I want McGenius back. John Fredericks, Radio Network.
Turn for grace. It's a beautiful day. Sky falls, you feel that. It's a beautiful day. To live again away. On the
AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Murder charges have been filed against two 13-year-old boys suspected of starting a blaze that killed two firefighters at a Central California library. Police said that the boys were arrested after they were seen running from Porterville City Library shortly after flames erupted. Tulare County prosecutors filed two counts of murder with special circumstances of multiple murders and arson. The boys denied the charges and remain in jail. A California man who said that he wanted to fly to the edge of outer space to see if the world is flat or round has died after his home-built rocket blasted off into the desert sky and plunged back to Earth. Mad Mike Hughes was killed on Saturday after his rocket crashed near Barstow, California. Waldo Stakes, a colleague who was at the rocket launch, said Hughes, who was 64, was killed. More details at srnnews.com.
Hi, this is Dennis Prager. There are over 400 programs in the Prager store, and now by becoming a Pragertopia Unlimited member, you can listen to every program in the store. Courses, lectures, show segments, even my Torah teachings. Almost everything I've ever recorded over the last 20 years, over 1,000 hours of program. Of course, Pragertopia Unlimited members get every radio show since 2009 as well. All commercial-free on demand. Wow. No, this is a big deal. This is truly a big deal, if I'm allowed to say that about my own work. For a limited time, it's only $119 for an entire year to join Pragertopia Unlimited. Get to listen to every show in the Prager store, every lecture I've given, every course. And you'll get a coupon for 50% off the Rational Bible, Genesis, which is autographed. I put my life into these works. They're meant to change your life, open up your mind, and they make a spectacular gift. Go to Pragertopia.com and sign up. Pragertopia.
My name is Sheila. I did hard drugs and alcohol in my early 20s, but it all stopped once I got pregnant with my daughter. I remained clean and sober for 20 years, and then, after going through a divorce, I relapsed. Coming into CRM's Life Builders Recovery Program, I had never been in any sort of program. I came in angry, not wanting to do things God's way. I didn't realize how deep my problems were. It truly took losing everything to be at a place where life could begin. There's nothing that compares to what I feel now. I've experienced God's unconditional love for me, and I've seen my relationships with God and my family restored and strengthened. I now have a fire inside of me and a hope for my future and God's plan for my life.
I'm Penny Keevitt, Executive Director for the City Rescue Mission. Would you consider helping us make a difference as we provide hope, healing, and change to those who need it most? Visit us at crmjax.org. That's crmjax.org to learn more or to make a donation to help transform the lives of the hungry, homeless, and addicted in Northeast Florida.
Does your well water leave brown rust stains on clothes and fixtures? Does it smell bad? Get rid of it all with the HydroCare Iron 300X. HydroCare's multi-stage process gets rid of iron, sulfide, and odors. HydroCare is an easily installed, compact system without tanks, backwashing, or servicing, and only costs $799. You'll be amazed how fresh and clean well water can be. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, visit goodclearwater.com. Goodclearwater.com.
Tune in to AM 600 every Saturday morning for the Captain Vic Tyson Still Just Fishing Show, sponsored by Frontline Insurance. Find out where those fish are, what they're biting, and how to get them in the boat. Get the latest fishing info on tides, weather, and new products, and much more from the Sultan of the St. John's, Captain Vic Tyson. Start your weekend right. Tune in to the Captain Vic Tyson Still Just Fishing Show, Saturday mornings from 6 till 8, right here on AM 600 WBOB. Listen online or get the podcast at WBOB.com.
I thought I told you never to interrupt me while I'm working.
Join the live Twitter discussion.
I'm Twittering. Did you get my tweets? I just quoted all over the place.
Follow John Fredericks at JF Radio Show.
Rich Anderson with us now. Hey, Rich. Good to have
you
with
us. Good morning, John. Good morning.
Okay. Rich, tell us about your campaign and... You know, some concern is we're going into 2020. We're going to have this rousing convention, record turnout, major speakers there. We're turning it into a Trump rally type thing. And you're challenging the chairman, who basically is Jack Wilson, why should we change horses in the middle of the stream?
Well, John, that's a pretty good question.
Thank you.
I think probably the reason is because our party is on the ropes. We have had a significant protracted period of decline in the party, and we're going into a major, major convention effort. It will not be done by me alone if I am chairman. It will be done by a lot of folks who love this Commonwealth and a lot of processes that are now in place and a lot of manpower out there in the field that will come in and help us to do this, but it's absolutely crucial that we get new vision and new leadership in the Republican Party of Virginia. The past is prologue, and our past has been pretty abysmal here in Virginia. We've got a trifecta of a Democratic governor, lieutenant governor, and both houses of the Virginia General Assembly. We just can't navigate our way to this election in the way that we have in the past. If we always do what we always did, we'll always get what we always got. Pretty much it.
Okay, you cannot defend Jack's record as chairman. The party is bankrupt. He's not raised any money. And he didn't preside over 2017, but he presided over the end of 2018 and all of 2019, and we lost everything. So you can't defend his. I mean, he can't defend his record. It just doesn't. It's just impossible. So his contention for getting reelected is that look, it's about Trump in 2020. I've got a relationship there. I know the apparatus. I'm focused on winning in 2020. Somebody new gets in, takes them 90 days to change everything over, and then we're behind the eight ball. How do you respond to that?
Well, I could respond to that with any new chairman, whoever that may be, can step into this whole process and take leadership, particularly if they have experience at large organizations. You mentioned earlier about my career path. I was a senior leader at the Pentagon before that in Air Force operational units. I commanded the Air Force Auxiliary, which consisted of 60,000 members in 1,700 units, principally in CONUS, in the continental United States, but also in overseas locations. So I can tell you right now, I know how to run a big, complex outfit. I think that's probably why a number of people urged me to do this. You had mentioned earlier that our Republican delegation, Morgan Griffith, Rob Whitman, Ben Klein, are supporting me. I have a large support in the House of Delegates delegation as well as the Senate delegation. But those people don't really count to the depth that our volunteers, our grassroots people in the field count. Since I decided to do this in early January, I put 6,500 miles on my car. I'm speaking to you from my mother's kitchen in Roanoke, Virginia, my hometown, because I'm going to be spending time down here, every corner of the Commonwealth. I do know this Commonwealth because I was born and raised in Roanoke, went to school at Virginia Tech. During my 30-year Air Force career, I spent exactly, unbelievably, half of it in Virginia. I spent 5 years in Hampton Roads at United States Atlantic Command. I understand that end of the state. I have family down there, our daughter. And then I ended up in Northern Virginia for a Pentagon assignment that lasted nearly a decade, and I've been there 20 years. And this challenge is going to be in the outer suburbs of Virginia. It's just the way this thing has evolved. So on May the 3rd, I intend to hit the ground. There are people out there who are ready to move out in lock fashion to ensure the reelection of President Trump.
Okay, so Rich Anderson, you have been around the state, right? A number of people have told me you've
Correct.
Come and talked at their unit meetings. Yesterday, I had Jack Wilson on my show. I got a text from somebody in New Kent, said he hadn't been there. You had been there. Got a text from Amy in Fairfax, said Jack hadn't been there. I think he went last night. Both you and, by the way, the other candidate, we'll get to him in a minute, is Mike Schoer, and he is the unit chair for Lancaster. And another astonishing thing I just want to tell you, Rich, is I was told yesterday, because I'm running for national delegate in my district, which is District 4 in Virginia, so we're now combing the files for past delegates, calling them up, identifying them, just like you do when you run a campaign. And I found out yesterday that Rob Whitman, Congressman Whitman, was personally calling 2016 delegates up in Chester on your behalf last night. I mean, that I've never seen that. I got to be honest. I've never seen a congressman calling past delegates up for a chairman ever. And a couple people told me that they had gotten a phone call from him. So right there, I think that shows everybody the seriousness of the Anderson campaign for chairman.
Right. Well, I've worked very hard in Rob's campaigns as long as he has been in the United States Congress representing the 1st Congressional District. We have a history. I've known Rob and I have known each other for 41 years since the late 70s when we were both members of the Virginia Tech Corps of Cadets. We lived together. I know him. He knows me. He's a great state and national leader. And to be quite honest with you, I was unaware he was doing that. But I think that indicates the level of support I have. But Jack, John, let me just swing to one thing, though. One of the reasons I got into this is because after the advance, and I was only there for a few hours on Saturday, if you recall, you and I ran into each other. And literally people began pinning me down in the hallways about running. And then when I returned home from the advance, my phone literally came off the hook. I started keeping a log, and after the 300th person called me, who I did not know most of those people, but they were out there in our Republican units at the local level. We have 130 some of those. And I finally decided maybe I need to do this. And so if I can play a role, and it will not be an exclusive solo flight for me, we've got to fly in formation, if I can draw that analogy, to win this for President Trump this year, and then to begin the long game of recovering our party so that it wins in Virginia.
So, Rich, you were pretty much an avowed never-Trumper for a long time. In fact, when you ran your campaign in 2019, you ran away from the president. I'm not disputing your strategy.
Actually, John, that's not true. John, that's actually not true, but go ahead and then I'll respond.
Well, you didn't embrace the president. Then the guy you hired to help you, Nick Collette, is probably one of the most vicious of the Never Trumpers on social media, young fellow that used to work for Obenshain. So, I'm just not interested in any more Republicans that hate the president. We've gone through this in the administration, the John Boltons, the whole bunch of them, the Kellys. I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of the Never Trumpers getting into positions and then screwing Trump. And so that's my concern with the campaign. And, you know, my question is, you know, during 2016, where the Trump delegates there were getting raped on the floor by Cuccinelli and the Cruz people, where was Rich Anderson? Where was this other guy, Mike Schoer? Where were these people? Where have they been for Trump 2016, 17, 18, and 19? Now all of a sudden they show up, hey, where for him after we've been fighting him? Explain that to me. Help me.
Well, let me explain that to you, John. In 2017, when I ran and was unsuccessful, I knocked on literally thousands of doors. And at the doors, that was the first year of the Trump presidency, I ended up having an infinitesimal number of conversations at the doors. I'm into grassroots politics. I may have been a delegate, but if you were to ask anyone in the Prince William Republican Party committee in my home community, you would see about the depth of immersion I had at the doors, always speaking on behalf of President Trump. I kid you not. And then this year, or rather I should say in 2019, in a very critical year of trying to recover some of these House of Delegates seats, I knocked on more doors, and the caucus tracks it. I knocked on more doors than any delegate candidate in the state of Virginia, 10,000. And I can tell you that I had deep, searching discussions about President Trump, and anyone who was with me at those doors will know that I supported our president. I spent 30 years in a military uniform. I have a special respect for the office of the President of the United States. I took an oath to do so, and I am still subject to recall to active duty. There's a low opportunity of that happening, but nonetheless, I embrace those same principles. Now, when you mentioned the convention in 2016, I was president that I was present at that convention. It was in Harrisonburg, I think, if I remember correctly.
The Harrisonburg heist.
Okay, and I think that that was my second convention. So I go to the convention, and obviously I'm not steeped in convention politics. I'm accustomed to retail street politics running in elections for public office. But what I remember about that, and I have very little memory, but the one blazing standout memory I have is how that convention was pure pandemonium. Let's just use that word. I remember getting there, and it became immediately confusing to those who weren't steeped in convention dynamics.
Right.
And as I recall, early on, the chairman of the convention lost control of the convention and permitted all those other things to unfold. I remember it was a battle, if I recall, over delegates to the Republican National Convention.
Right.
And it became a runaway convention. And the chairman lost control of the convention. And I got to tell you, I know something about parliamentary procedure. I know something about Robert's Rules and Jefferson's Manual and how to chair a large-scale gathering. I know how to do that. I navigated the floor of the House of Delegates and chaired a committee. And I can tell you, I know how to operate in that forum. And the chairman lost control, and that we saw pure pandemonium and all of those things that happened.
Okay.
Let me just say one more thing, if I could.
Yes.
That was a very disturbing period, 2016, 4 years ago. But what has happened now is, for those people who doubted in 2016, the president has turn this country around. We have a roaring economy, unprecedented employment rates across not just minority demographics, but all demographics. He's rebuilt our military, very precious to me. He's preserving our Second Amendment, very precious to me. He's preserving life, protecting life, very important to me. He has navigated us to a place where we may be ridiculed by certain elements in our country about our foreign policy, but by God, people know that he carries a big stick, and it worked for Teddy Roosevelt, and it's working for him. So I think it's time for those who were doubters to move on from those partisan politics of 2016 and to engage in making our country what it should be.
Okay, I'll take you on face value that if you get in there, you're not going to screw Trump. Let me just ask you this.
I'll make that public pledge here and now.
All right, well, I'm going to hold you to your word. Look, Rich, I don't want to go back in the past and Cuccinelli threatening the convention and all that. And we called it the Harrisonburg heist. We got screwed there. They shut my microphone off as the chairman. They took key people out. After we had a pledge deal, I don't want to go back and relive that or relitigate that. It is what it is. But what I am interested in is, we've lived through this administration with bringing all these never Trumpers in, and they've screwed the president at every turn. That's all I know. And so I'm just frankly, Rich Anderson, I'm sick of that. I'm just not interested in these people anymore. And so I want your assurances that if you get in there, you're going to stand behind President Trump and his America First policy agenda as it relates to Virginia.
Exactly. I'm John, hold my feet to the fire, as I know you will, but I'm telling you, the reasons we have lost elections is not moving out in lockstep behind the leader of our party.
Thank you.
It's absolutely crucial we do that. An army marching onto the battlefield, an air wing attacking a target cannot be successful if it is not waging war in complete unison. And there's a lot of differences between, or a lot of similarities between politics and war, except I think Churchill summarized it. He said, on the military battlefield, you have one life to live, but on a political battlefield, you have multiple opportunities to rise and fight again. We have got to rise, and we've got to fight again.
All right, Rich, I'm going to, Kara, we're going to extend this interview for about 4 minutes because we've talked about a lot of the past, and that's not really helpful going forward, although I'm comfortable now with a statement that you made, and we've all got to get past it. But let me just ask you this. Give me the five things in a couple of minutes that you're going to do. The five things that are not being done now that if Rich Anderson is chairman, that you're going to do for the Republican Party of Virginia that is going to make a difference. Five things. Top five.
Okay. All right. Top five. First of all, our goal, the immediate goal for the remainder of this year is to reelect President Trump so that he continues as the 45th president of the United States. And we can best do that by working hard to ensure, and in unison, and in solidarity, to ensure that he carries Virginia in November. Secondly, we have got to put Republican Party of Virginia finances in order by fundraising at competitive levels and on a national scale. In 2018, which admittedly was an off year, the Democratic Party of Virginia raised $1.1 million to our $180,000. And then in 2019, a very competitive year, we raised six, they raised 10. You just can't compete in that. And so I plan on moving into those areas and also to increase participation by small givers. Those two elements, big givers and small givers, are absolutely crucial. And the best way we can do that is forging a Republican Party of Virginia that, again, earns the trust of our rank-and-file members, our elected officials, our voters, and, of course, our donors. We've got to register new voters at unprecedented rates. I'll give the party credit. It has begun that process, but the Democrats have a full decade leap on us. I watched it unfold as a grassroots person here in Prince William County. We've got to grow our party to absolutely superior numbers, or we're cooked. We then, once we've got all those people in the bucket, so to speak, we have to develop aggressive voter turnout mechanisms because we've got to ensure historic participation by Republicans. I've heard you talk about better modeling and predictive models and not flying in the blind. We absolutely have to do that. Mm-hmm. And then we've got to recruit, train, and support candidates. Solid. I'm talking about solid candidates across the state who can compete and win. And that means we've got to identify them early, years out. We've got to train them. I know that the Jennifer Byler Institute went by the wayside, but we've got to reinstitute that and also plan and execute other training opportunities, not only for candidates, but also for our grassroots campaign workers. As I've made my way around the state, I have met so many people who are elected officials at the local level who damn well should be in the House of Delegates or the state Senate or more. And I've met non-office holders who have exceptional skills and ought to step forward and offer themselves in service in elected office. Uh-huh. And we have got to ensure that no congressional or general assembly seat is ever unchallenged by a winning GOP candidate.
Well, any candidate. I mean, the fact that we had 50 seats or something between the House and Senate that were unchallenged was just it was a terrible mistake.
27 in the House and 15 in the Senate. Now,
how many is that? Let me just say 42 seats unchallenged. That's a joke,
John. That's really the prime. Let me hear me out on this.
Go ahead.
It's really the primary responsibility of the caucuses in the House and Senate to do that. I recognize that. But by God, this party had better work in lockstep with those caucuses. They're a major stakeholder, just as our local units and volunteers are, and play a supporting role. And where the caucus has difficulties, I believe that RPV should step in and help to deepen that bench so we don't have uncontested seats without Republicans. And the best way that can happen is for the chairman and his immediate circle and his congressional district chairs to be on the road constantly. You can't win the war if you don't march on the battlefield. And so I've already demonstrated I'm willing to pack my suitcase and get on the road. And what you also don't know is, as an aviator, as a pilot, I intend to be a flying chairman. I can get to Abingdon from Northern Virginia in about an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. All right. Look, Rich, let me ask you one other thing. Are you, as chairman, if you're chairman of the Republican Party of Virginia, are you going to be an advocate in getting rid of these asinine, gut-wrenching, soul-ripping out nominating conventions that have eaten at this very soul and bones of the party since Cochin Helly in 2013? Can we finally get back to primaries where people can go and choose a candidate and they can prove that they can win, rather than these little itty bitty nominating conventions that people manipulate and control, and it's keep it small, control it all? Are you going to be an advocate of getting rid of those?
Well, you're actually the first person who's asked me that, John. So I haven't had a considerable time to think about that.
That's fair.
When I was for my four elections as a delegate representing Prince William County, I was always nominated by a primary. So I'm accustomed to primaries. I've never run in a convention myself, but I don't think that I am at the place right now, and I'm being totally transparent here, where I can say that we will go exclusively to one methodology or another. I think I've got to consult people, not only on the State Central Committee, but our grassroots people, and all that will become
evident. Well, sure, if you consult them,
here's
what they're going to say. You consult them, okay. They're going to say, oh, yeah, we want conventions, so my little tiny Republican unit in God knows where can control a convention, and then we can manipulate it, and then we can change it, and then we can get the most right-wing candidate that we can possibly find that can't win in general. I mean, that's what they're going to say. Uh-huh. And then you go into these conventions, it's hand-to-hand combat. The minute you leave, no matter who wins, everybody's pissed off. These things are a disaster. You get no voter information. You get nothing out of them. I don't know why we continue to have that. I would love to see a chairman get up there, stand up to these little unit chairmen, keep it small and control it all, and said, I've had enough. I am going to push for a primary in every nominating situation that is not party only, like chairman, the national delegate, things of that nature. But anything that is open, it should be a primary. Go win a primary. Amanda Chase yesterday got on the air and had the balls. And I'm going to say that right on the air. She had the balls to say, if they choose a convention for governor, I'm going to give you the finger and I'm going to run as an independent because I'm sick of these things. I want a primary. And then go out and beat me. And until, I'm telling you, Rich, until you, Jack, or Mike Schor, other candidate running, can stand up and say you are unequivocally opposed to these asinine conventions that have torn the party to shreds, you're never going to win. Never. So I'll leave you with that. I got to go. I'm out of time. But I thank you, Rich, for what you're doing.
All right, John. Well,
keep coming on my show. Keep putting out the message.